final case of the day is United States against Caldwell.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Paul Gaziano of the Federal Defender Program representing Rita Crundwell, who is appealing her sentence of 235 months for the offense of wire fraud. We are seeking a reversal and remand of the sentence on two bases. First of all, we believe that the district court judge, at the time of sentencing, improperly applied what I will call guideline application notes to justify a variance of a sentence. The sentencing guideline range, which was reasonably calculated and which was agreed to by the parties as being a proper sentencing range, found that Ms. Crundwell was at a sentencing range of 151 to 188 months. At the time of the sentence...
But they're not mandatory, though, are they?
The guidelines are not mandatory.
And how many criminal defendants have you represented have had criminal activity of this nature over 20-some years?
I can honestly say that I don't believe I have had any who have had continuously committed crimes. I've had a number of clients who have
successful ones.
For a number of 20 years have committed many crimes.
I guess my point, well, you see my point.
I understand the court's point, and I understand that the guidelines are not mandatory. They are advisory in our post-Booker days. However, the district court judge, in deciding to vary from the guidelines, relied upon Application Note 19 of Section 2B1.1 and 5K2.7. I have conceded in our opening brief that... there was a significant disruption of governmental function by this massive theft of funds. I've conceded that. My argument is that the trial court took Application Note 19, which addresses psychological harm.
The problem is that it doesn't matter whether that guideline or that application note authorizes a departure. Departures are defunct after Booker. The question only is whether the district court's sentence is reasonable in light of the statutory criteria. And you seem to be litigating this on the assumption that we are going to enforce the guidelines departure rules 8 years after Booker. Townsend says we don't do that. It's gone. The whole framework is gone.
I understand the court's question, and Townsend, a recent case by this circuit, recognized that there are potential problems with relating
to...
Yes,
we gave three of them, but you don't contend that any one of the three is present.
I would suggest that perhaps there could be a fourth problem, and that fourth problem is where a judge applies a policy statement to justify a variance from the suggested guideline range, and the use of that policy statement under the facts of the case is not appropriate.
No, that's the particular thing that Townsend rejected. Townsend said making a mistake about a policy statement is not a ground for reversal. Erroneously believing that a policy statement requires a higher sentence would be a ground of reversal. But you don't contend that the district judge believed that the policy statement required a higher sentence. Your contention is the district judge was mistaken in thinking that the policy statement authorized a higher sentence. But since you don't need departure statements to authorize higher sentences, it just seems a non-starter after Booker. What's missing here?
Well, in Townsend, Your Honor, as I understand Townsend involved defendants seeking a departure or a variance.
Yes. Your reply brief distinguishes Townsend on the ground that dealt with a downward variance, whereas this case deals with an upward variance. And that sounds like a total irrelevancy under the rationale of both Booker and Townsend.
But also in Townsend, the judge did not rely upon the policy statement in making his decision. In this case, the trial judge did rely upon the policy statement and found psychological harm to non-victims as being a reason to elevate or vary a sentence. I would respectfully request that the court consider that by applying that factor and combining it with significant disruption of government function, we are left with a confusing area as to what effect using psychological harm of non-victims had upon the sentence that was ultimately imposed.
I'm a little confused. The government cites United States versus Pabee, the 2011 case.
That's correct.
In our court. Doesn't that case say that this type of harm, non-monetary harm, can be considered in
Pabee addressed a loss of public confidence in the government, in the whatever function was at issue in Pabee. But
right.
The fact is,
wasn't there evidence in the record here of loss of confidence in the Dixon government?
I believe there was. However, the judge, the sentencing judge, went a step further and found that there had been psychological harm to citizens of the city of Dixon. There is no place in the record where psychological harm was established. There were a number of letters that are in the record at, I believe, documents 51, 58, and 59 from concerned citizens, but none of them addresses a psychological harm, nor did the government introduce any evidence of psychological harm. So I believe that with Pabee, my concession that, yes, there was a disruption, but when we're talking about a significant variance from the guidelines, I don't know how much of a factor the district court placed upon the psychological harm that was never established and what effect that had on the sentencing process. And that was a bit of confusion in the sentence. I'd also like to address in the moments I have the second reason for seeking a reversal of this sentence, and that is that at the time of sentencing, Ms. Cronwell established through various stipulations of two FBI agents that there had been a significant amount of cooperation. We believe that was a significant, non-frivolous, mitigating argument to be taken into consideration by the sentencing judge. The judge, only in passing, referred to that cooperation. The sentencing judge did not address what effect that cooperation should have had or could have had in his sentencing range. The judge sentenced Ms. Cronwell to 6 months short of the statutory maximum. I see I'm approaching my rebuttal time, but I believe that with the failure to address a specific non-frivolous mitigating factor, this court is left with the question, we cannot tell if the district court abused its discretion on the sentence imposed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Mr. Peterson.
May it please the court. This was a case where the defendant used her trusted position as a city official at the city of Dixon to steal more than $53 million over two decades and then successfully prevent the detection during that entire time. At the same time she was stealing these millions of dollars from the city of Dixon, she sat in budget meetings and said nothing as cuts were made, including cuts to the maintenance of the city streets, discussion of police radios that were needed for officer safety. That was rejected as she sat there. And the city ultimately was even considering laying off employees because they didn't have enough money to pay all of them. In this case, the district court properly weighed all the factors in aggravation and mitigation under section...
Population of Dixon.
The approximate population is 15,000.
15,000, not enough for them to engage an independent auditor?
They did have an auditor.
So, in addition to having a thieving employee, it had an incompetent auditor. Not catching a $53 million theft over a 20-year period reflects rather poorly on the auditor.
I believe there was civil litigation that the city engaged in.
I can imagine.
But that wasn't something that our investigation addressed. The court did address all the defendant's arguments in mitigation, including her argument that she had provided cooperation in the location and liquidation of her assets. As the court heard at sentencing, we explained to the court, the government explained to the court that the government had taken into account the defendant's cooperation in its decision to only file one count of wire fraud against the defendant, effectively capping her sentence at 20 years. And that was something that the court had heard prior to imposing the sentence.
How old was she when she was sentenced?
She was 60. And the court also made that finding as well, though, based on her life expectancy, that the sentence was not a de facto life sentence. In addition, the court considered
Had the Marshal Service, whoever was doing it, recovered anything by the time of sentencing? Sold assets?
Yes.
They had?
They had sold all the 400 horses that the defendant had purchased.
And what kind of recovery did they make?
The horses sold for approximately $6 million, but during the time period that they had to be cared for and maintained, the marshals incurred substantial costs because the horses were located in over 13 states. And
she'd owned them but had them placed in other locations.
Pardon me?
She owned those horses but had them in other locations.
Yes. There was a substantial number in Dixon. There's also some just north.
But anyway, $6 million you said?
Yes. And that was selling them all at the same time.
They got an RV, didn't they? A couple million dollars in the RV.
And she had several, many vehicles, trailers, semi-trailer.
Nobody in Dixon noticed all of this happening. She's got these horses, she's got this $2 million RV and so forth.
There was testimony from some of the officials at the sentencing hearing from the city of Dixon that the understanding was that her horse business was very successful and that's where the money was coming from.
Was it?
Pardon me?
Was it?
Well, given the costs that the marshals incurred in our investigation, it appeared the only way she could sustain the business was to continue to take money from the city of Dixon.
Paying for the grub of 400 horses is even more expensive than the suitors who are eating Ulysses' family out of house and home.
So doesn't the Paby case address Ms. Crundwell's concerns here?
That's our position, and that was one of the things I was going to bring up before you brought it up, Your Honor, was that cited that case in our brief. The defendant, in her reply brief, they never cited that case or attempted to distinguish it. And our position is that the psychological harm caused by the defendant's conduct was the loss of confidence that the citizens had in their government. And the defendant has conceded that point in their brief. They conceded the fact that her conduct caused the citizens of Dixon to lose confidence in their government. So on that issue, we believe the defendant has not... his argument does not that the defendant's argument should be rejected on Paby alone. As for the defendant's argument that the court didn't properly consider argument in mitigation, I would just ask the court to consider the judge's comments at sentencing where he indicated that he had considered the cooperation, but given the length of the scheme, the effect on the city of Dixon, both financially and the loss of confidence that the citizens would have in their government, that the court ultimately rejected that argument, and that's all the court is required to do.
Was there any indication during this 20-year period that she had some regrets and decided to give it up, or she just continued on?
That the defendant...
That she decided to stop the pilfering of the money.
A month prior to her arrest, she had taken over $300,000 from the city of Dixon. At the same time, the city was discussing having to lay off employees because they didn't have the funds to pay them. So,
the answer is probably no then.
The evidence didn't indicate that there was any time that she would stop. The horses alone, the amount of money that it took to take care of them and pay for their feed and care was a substantial amount of money each month.
Did she operate anything else with in her place? I mean, riding lessons, those type of things, or is it just only the horses?
Only horses. She was also engaged in the horse breeding business where other... horse breeders or other
bringing there for stud services.
Yes.
Were they all quarter horses?
Yes. And she was a world champion quarter horse owner. So, unless there's any other questions, we would just ask that the court affirm the sentence of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Gaziano, anything further?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to respond to two issues. First of all, the restitution issue. I believe that the record at the trial court was that there was about $10 or $12 million that was in restitution from the sale, not only of the horses, but of the...
I didn't ask about the real estate and that other thing.
However, it's important that that's a significant amount of restitution. A lot of that restitution and savings of restitution figures came from the efforts of Ms. Crundwell. That's established by the stipulation in the record. I would also like to point out the court inquired about auditors and that matters, and the government responded about civil suits. Those civil suits have been settled, and the city has received approximately $40 million in settlement proceeds. There are no further questions.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.
Thank you, Your Honor.